you need to stop at your peak. Once you're 31, 32, you're old. From what I'm seeing and what I'm experiencing myself, I think the most important in sports is like the longevity. If you can stretch your career, why not?
Today we have the pleasure of welcoming Sarakita Ofringa, a world champion windsurfer, passionate athlete, and proud Arubian who's made waves across the globe.
The scariest I've done was competing in Fiji. I was shaking on the board. I looked at the photos and I was like, whoa, there was like a monster behind me.
She's earned an incredible 22 world titles.
I gotta update my website. It's 25 titles. I think I have this like worry of falling into an abyss of nothingness if I'm not competing anymore. Because I'm such a competitive person and it really drives me.
But for Sarakita, windsurfing is more than a sport. It's a lifestyle.
There's never really a break. Like I'm always chasing the wind.
People, welcome to the Sunside Kingdom Show. People, it's been an amazing time. Today we are at Aruba Experience. The patrona here definitely embraced us and gave us this amazing opportunity to record something in a authentic UNESCO type building here in Aruba, giving you a true Arubian experience. See you guys in the next vlog. See you guys in the next one. Have a blessed time, blessed day. Big ups one more time to Aruba Experience and the whole staff here. Suzanette, thanks again for hosting us and having some of the best lunches out here, man. That chicken breast was, you know. Signing out, bless. Welcome, Sarakita.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
How are you?
Good. I gotta update my website. It's 25 titles.
See, even the website can't keep up.
That's my own fault. I gotta go and update that one.
Yeah. Mm. So 25 titles and we're in 2025. So when did you win the first title?
I won my first world title when I was, I think 17 or 18. I don't remember, but it was in 2008.
2008, okay. So 17 years ago.
Yeah, but yeah. I think after a few years, I started winning double titles. Mm. So for two disciplines. And last year was the first time that I won all three disciplines in 1 year.
Oh, wow.
So that way I accumulated more titles than the amount of years that I've been competing, kind of.
Yeah. Awesome. So if if we're looking in the crystal ball of today, I know they always say you can't ask a lady her age, but I always do. So you're 33 right now?
Yeah, I'm 33 now. I'll turn 34 in a few months.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And what is life like today at 33?
It's a lot of fun, I would say. It's exactly what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. If you would ask me 10 years ago, what mm-hmm. I'm doing right now is exactly what I would have wanted to be doing. So I'm traveling a lot for competition. I travel a lot to train as well in different locations to find the right conditions for certain competitions. Mm-hmm. I have photo shoots for different sponsors in different locations. And I have some cool collaborations during the year also with, you know, my sponsors or brands or even companies here on the island. And mm-hmm. I feel like with projects like that, you meet really cool people as well, also in different areas. So I think just in general, it's very diverse, all the things that I get to experience.
Yeah. Because so. Is it Enya?
Yeah, Enya and Seitar are my local sponsors here in Aruba.
Okay, because I think I've seen multiple Enya billboards since I came on the island.
Yeah, the billboards are cool.
awesome. So those, could you break down a bit more of those different elements of the sport? What exactly does that mean?
So my year basically revolves around training for the world tour. Mm-hmm. And this, it's called the PWA, and there's different disciplines on that tour, and you go to different competitions, different countries. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, the one that earns the most points wins mm-hmm. the world title.
So kind of like how the Formula One is, that yeah. it goes to different places around the world.
Yeah.
And what are some of the locations that you go to then?
Since I'm 14, I've been traveling to the Canary Islands. So that's like a staple on tour. Gran Canaria, Fuerteventura, Tenerife, Lanzarote. That's always in July. So I've been going there for the past 17 years. I just came back from Chile. The end of the year usually ends in Hawaii. I've been going to Germany for a long time, Denmark.
So windsurfing in Germany as well?
Yeah, in the northern part of Germany. Okay. It's really close to Denmark.
The Hamburg area?
You drive past Hamburg. It's another 2 hours further up north, and then you take a ferry. It's an island. It's called Sylt, and it's an island off the coast.
But that's in the summer then?
That's in September, October, which is usually when the autumn storms start in Europe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Isn't the water a bit cold?
It's very cold. It's not, in terms of temperature, it's not my favorite event.
Yeah,
but,
I can imagine.
Yeah, but it puts me out of my comfort zone. And I think every single time I'm done competing there, I feel like I overcame something, you know? So I'm very satisfied after that event. Nice. So, yeah. And other places, I've competed here in Aruba before. The last World Cup we had here was in 2011. That's a long time ago. Bonaire was pretty recent still. And yeah, where else? Yeah. Usually the year looks the same, but every so often there's a new
location.
And for me this year it was Chile.
So when you mentioned that you won in all three categories, that was in 24 or in 25?
Last year in 2024, I won the.
And what are those three categories?
So on the PWA you have racing slalom. Mm-hmm. Which is, there's a starting line, there's four marks, and when the green flag goes up, the first one that rounds all the marks and finishes, that you win that race, basically. And then after set amount of races, they check the points, and then you win that contest.
Yeah.
And then there's freestyling, which is what I started in, which is doing tricks with your board and your sail. You don't need any waves, it's flat water. That's actually the first title that I won in 2008. And they judge you on the difficulty of the moves, how well you perform them. And it's in you have like a square box and you need to perform the moves in that square.
Which, so are there like buoys in
Yeah, there's four buoys in the water. There's a judging tower, there's a panel, and they all give you points for all the moves you score. So there's a maximum of, you need to do four moves on each tack, basically, and then they score you on that. Which is pretty stressful because you only have like 7 minutes to perform eight moves, which... It really requires a lot of training to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And then the latest discipline I got into is wave sailing, which is not apparent because in Aruba you really don't have that many waves. So it took me quite some years to progress in that. I had to spend more time away from home, traveling to Cape Town, Australia, which are awesome places. But I sacrificed like time at home, I would say.
Yeah.
And there they score you on the way you surf the wave. And in some locations, you also get scored on jumps.
Okay.
So it's super diverse, this whole tour.
So so was that then the last one that... Because you meant... Maybe it was off camera. You mentioned that you've won the single and then you've been winning double. And now you just won a triple.
Yes.
So that last one was the third?
The waves, yeah. So I started out freestyling and I won a couple of titles... with freestyle, maybe I think like five or six. Then at some point, I was like, okay, you know, I want to keep challenging myself. So I moved over to slalom because a lot of times these contests are coming together, right? So after the freestyle contest, the slalom contest starts. So I was there watching them racing and I got excited about that. So I started practicing that. So I won that, the freestyle and the slalom title. I won it four or five times in a row, like in the same year. And then after I won the slalom title a couple of times, I moved into wave sailing to just keep challenging myself. And that title I won for the first time in 2019.
Okay.
And after that, I kind of... So at some point I was doing a little bit too much because I'm the only athlete that competes in all three disciplines on the tour. I think most athletes on tour, they only stick to one discipline. let alone two, let alone three.
So can I ask, like, where does that come from? Is that a bit of the island thing where we tend to be a bit more of a jack of all trades rather than only specializing in one area?
I wonder if it is. And the thing is, if you look at the tour, the people that are better at more disciplines are from the Caribbean. Like the boys from Bonaire, they're really good at racing and freestyling, for example.
Yeah.
So I think you may be right. Maybe it's a thing from here that we just like to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of fun. Like I can't see myself sticking to one discipline. I think the sport itself, it offers so much fun in all the different disciplines, and I go to so many different places depending on the discipline, you know. So, and I just don't want to miss out on all of that, so might as well do it all.
You're just experiencing life to the fullest.
yeah if I can. Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah,
so this is so let's maybe tap into a bit. We're talking about all the titles, and the titles is that big moment where the champagne pops and the cameras flash. But what is your life like then? Let's say during training times, and what sort of mindset did you need to develop to be able to compete at this level for so long?
So I basically compete like half a year. Like the season runs from May till November, I would say. And then from November till May, I kind of have off season.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that I'm like in off season, if the tour finishes, I have this dip. So I tend to not winter for maybe 2 weeks, even up to a month at some point. But then you kind of just pick it up again. And then the off season is the time that I actually try to find the best places around the world to train. Like I travel there to train in different conditions, because every country, every location has their wind season. In the Caribbean, it runs from December till July maybe, and then from July to November it's hurricane season, so there's no wind in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So I always need to find the best places for that. So actually, what I'm trying to say is it feels like there's never really a break. Like I'm always chasing the wind.
Chasing the wind.
Nice. Yeah. But I think the good thing about it is I think I can call windsurfing my job, but at the same time, it's still my biggest passion, you know? So if I'm chasing the wind, it's because I want to. It's not like, it's a job. I have to go to this place to train.
It's your career.
Yeah, but
A career is different than a job.
Oh, career. Eh? Yeah. Actually, it's a good way of putting it. But
a career is different than a job.
Yeah. But then even above that, I feel like it's just my passion also, you know? So I'm lucky that I can make it a career, I would say. So yeah, I go to these places to train. So it doesn't feel like there's any break actually, but I don't really need it either. Like, I just want to keep on going. I think the changes that I've made since I'm younger is that I try to take care of myself a little bit more. During, like, traveling is pretty difficult to maintain yourself, I think, to have routines. I still struggle with that. But I make sure that I go to the gym more frequently, or at least on a consistent basis, even if I'm traveling. I try to eat better, not eat out all the time. So those are changes that I've made now.
Yeah.
For example, physically at least. And then I've also learned over the years to take time to come back home, I would say. Because in the beginning, I was so excited about traveling, or I felt like I couldn't go home because it was expensive, this and that. But in the end, it recharges you more to come back. Mentally, most importantly, just to come home and throw your luggage down and your mom makes a dinner for you, or, you know, you don't have to take care of everything all the time. Then I've learned that also over the years, that even if it's 4, 5, 6 days a week, it's always worth it to come back home for a little bit. So yeah.
Nice. So you just mentioned about passion, that this is your passion, and it's something that you started from in your teenage years, basically, and continued on throughout your life. How would you, so if we switch from passion now to purpose, how would you feel that you're connected to the purpose? To your purpose in life?
Hey, good question. Deep question. how I'm connected to my purpose in life. Is it possible to say that I'm still looking for it, or am I doing it?
That's possible. If you feel that you're still searching for it, or you're chasing the wind and figuring out where that pebble in the wind lands.
I think in my mind, I feel like it's never enough. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot with windsurfing and I've achieved a lot.
I mean, 25 world titles sounds like a lot.
Yeah, but then still somewhere in the back of my mind, I feel like I'm still searching for
what
it is I'm doing.
What else is there to achieve then within the sport, other than more titles?
For me, it's, so in the beginning, it's I want to win a title. Mm-hmm. It says you're the best in the world. Mm-hmm. But then, for example, my title that I won in 2008 in freestyle compared to the title that I won last year in freestyle, mm-hmm. I can't even compare. I'm so much better now than I was then, mm-hmm. you know? So then I realized after a couple of titles, actually what I'm chasing is the progress in the sport, mm-hmm. getting better at the sport itself.
Yeah, so more the journey element of it rather than the finale.
Yeah, and that's the fun part. It's the title is not the end. Like, you wake up the next day and life goes on, you know? Yeah, you have a title in the bag, but... next year you're competing, you're back at square one. So then I've learned very quickly that it's the progress and getting better at it, because it just becomes more fun to master your craft, I would say.
Yeah.
And that's why I also develop myself in different disciplines, because it kind of opens up your mind. Like, every discipline has different gear, so you need to set them up in different ways. There's different conditions, so... With wave sailing, I had to learn to read a wave, for example. Like, I would go down the line and the wave is breaking behind me, for example, you know? So okay. I didn't have a clue about that. And for me, it's really fun now to look back and see how much I've learned since then.
can I say something funny? Yeah. With my whole ignorance of the sport and the topic, I just had to think about Moana for some reason. What did you say? You had to learn to read the wave.
Yeah.
So could you maybe break that down a bit more? What does that mean, read the wave?
Because when you compete, or even when you're sailing itself, you want to hit the wave in the most critical section, which is right before it's breaking. If you go any further, it's called the shoulder. So the wave is pretty round. And there's no... how do you say that? There's no risk on the shoulder. So you can be like messing around down there, but the real action is happening behind you. When you're free sailing yourself, you also notice that part of the wave has much more power. It has much more satisfaction to hit that end section, for example. The waves are different around the world. So I think when I was competing in Germany, mm-hmm. When I just started out wave sailing, I had no clue about the spot, and apparently there was like a dike mm-hmm. with rocks.
Shit, was a dike again?
Or I don't
know. Not a valley. Anyways, we'll translate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a dike.
Just rocks.
Uh huh.
And I just remember I was so focused on a wave, and the next moment I was on top of this dike full of rocks, broke my fins, broke my board.
Damn.
And then I realized later the wave is only breaking there because it's very shallow, you know? So these are things that you learn along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Or to not panic when the wave in Hawaii, the first time I sailed in like 5-6 meter waves, I was held down pretty long.
Yeah.
And I feel like I kind of, back then it used to scare me. Now I'm so much better at it, you know? So it's, yeah.
Because in general, the waves in Hawaii are way bigger.
Bigger and stronger, most importantly. Now in Chile, it was also pretty big. The scariest I've done was competing in Fiji, which was 2 years ago. Biggest wave of my life, and I was shaking on the board.
How big was the wave?
Taller than, 6 meters, I think.
Wow.
Which it's hard to imagine, but then when you see the photos or you see it... Anyway, what I taught myself was to not look back on that wave. So I looked at the photos and I was like, whoa, there was a monster behind me, you know?
Can you send us the photos?
Yeah, I can send you those photos, But for me, that's like a total highlight to do something like that, especially coming from here. Like, I never would have thought I would have done that.
Yeah.
But to come back to the purpose part, like what I said before is like, first were the titles, then the progress. Then now what I'm experiencing is that it's really great to share all the knowledge that I have as well. So I feel like I'm finding some purpose and satisfaction in that as well.
Yeah.
I love teaching kids, giving them that experience on the water, because it's not just a sport, but the whole experience being at the beach, learning how to manage your sail while the wind is blowing into it. Like, you can't wrestle it. You have to like go with it.
Go with the flow.
Yeah. And so it's really nice to see kids do that, because the sport is pretty a 6-year-old kid can do it. It looks maybe very difficult, but in the end it's about balancing everything. The sharing the knowledge part is something that I'm enjoying now also a lot.
And awesome.
Then, yeah.
So talking about kids, let's go back to I'm gonna do some quick maths here. 91?
Yeah, born in 91.
Oh, cool. I have a niece born in 91. So 91, growing up in the 90s in Aruba, what was that like for young Sarakita?
In the 90s, Ooh, it's hard to go back. I think I had a good time. I grew up with my brother. He's 3 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we always did a lot of sports. I think my parents were super supportive of Quincy and me. We had the possibility of trying everything and anything we liked. Instruments, yeah. Sports.
So whatever you was interested in.
I mean, there were some rules, of course. Like if you wanted to do something, we'd have to do it for a year or something. Yeah. And they were pretty strict with that. But I kind of liked the approach of just seeing what we liked, you know. And in a sense, I actually followed my brother into a lot of sports, mm-hmm. like running, tennis, windsurfing. Quincy was the one that was, he picked it up so much quicker than I did. Mm. So I always had someone to look up to. And other than that, yeah, what I really liked also where we lived, we can always be out in the street, biking. Yeah. Not so much technology, I would say. So
you were still was way more of an outside kid.
A lot of outdoors, yeah. I think we had a good time, yeah.
So what does Quincy think now about his little sister with 25 world titles?
I don't know. I should ask him. But in a sense, he's still kind of my coach. He's a man of little words, I would say. Mm. But we have like an understanding.
Yeah.
And like for example, this last year, like. Sometimes he tells me congrats,
mm-hmm.
but I think the last contest where I didn't perform so well was in Tenerife,
mm-hmm.
and I finished fourth or something, which was okay, but like he hadn't written me about the event. Well, he called me about the event before, but it was quite quiet for a few days, and then I get a phone call and he's like, hey, you should have probably done better there, or like he was like telling me all the points where I should have done better or improve on. And I kind of like the straightforward feedback because he's such a knowledgeable windsurfer also.
Mm. So he still windsurfs a lot.
He windsurfs less now. He has a family and everything. Yeah. We go kite surfing together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He finished 10th in the world because we were traveling together. So I think somewhere in 2010 he was ranked 10th in the world.
I didn't know that.
So yeah, I trust my brother's judgment a lot, and yeah. It's good to have a person like that.
Yeah, close for to sure, you, so. For sure,
yeah,
for sure, awesome. So then we enter in the teen years, which is more the 2000s. What was that like for you? Starting to develop in the sport more while simultaneously, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. but you can correct me if I'm wrong, having more of a regular school life here in Aruba.
I was very busy with sports all the time. Like I swam competitively mm-hmm. from 9 till about 16 or till 17 years old, and that was actually my main sport until I was 17.
Yeah.
And I did so swimming, tennis, and windsurfing is what I did. So swimming kept me pretty busy, I would say. That was like the main thing, and then for school I feel like I didn't have a hard time with school. Like I would pass my tests relatively easily.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I managed to combine school and windsurfing and all the other sports that I did.
Yeah.
Having said that, I did my first World Cup when I was 12 and I finished fifth in windsurfing. And then when I was 14, I finished third in the world kind of. And
yeah.
Even so, it never still didn't take over the windsurfing part. I already got my sponsors when I was 14.
Yeah.
But all the way through high school, I was still swimming competitively, you know. But I think...
So just all around athlete.
Yeah, maybe. But I think what I got lucky with here in Aruba is that we have such good conditions. So even though I wouldn't windsurf during the week, I could windsurf every single weekend compared to someone living in Europe.
Yeah.
They'd have to take a break in the winter time.
True.
Whereas here we could spend so many hours. So, yeah. And I think all those different sports also added to the windsurfing because you get awareness of your body and... Yeah,
and the swimming definitely helps you to be very familiar with the water.
I think that's the best thing that's happened to me. Yeah, I'm super comfortable in the water, so I'm very grateful for my swimming career.
And then as you're wrapping up high school, you mentioned that you studied in Holland as well.
Yeah.
What did you study?
I studied science and innovation management in Utrecht.
Why the choice for that?
To be very honest, I was very late to find my study.
Okay.
I think I was already so wrapped up in windsurfing that I was already doing what I wanted to do, you know? So then the studies, like I passed my test and everything and I took a sabbatical. I had 1 year off. So I just windsurfed all year long.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in May, I had to decide what I wanted to study in August. So I just chose some of the courses that I was good at, I would say. And that's just how it happened. So
and then you did so it was a habeo. You did
No, I went to university. I got my bachelor's degree, bachelor in science.
So that was in 3 years then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you went to VWO here then?
Yeah, I did VWO here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Took a year off, then went to Holland to study. I think what I got lucky with is that I actually like to study. Like I don't mind sitting down, sitting for hours and reading text, you know? So I think that helped me also.
But anything of let's say that diploma has it been put into work in your career since?
You know, the thing with windsurfing is that I don't have a coach, I don't have a manager. I'm managing everything myself and along the way you learn how to do that. But I think studying has helped me to get better at that quicker, you know? Just the fact that I had to write papers, that I had to work together in groups, that I had this schedule. So I kind of, that discipline kind of also helped for my windsurfing life afterwards, I would say. And I guess it gives you this a bit of comfort knowing that you have a diploma in your pocket. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to use it, but I think the whole experience of being in Holland, regardless of the studies, actually just managing yourself away from the island, that was a whole thing. And I still think that's the most important experience I've had in my life, just to move away to Holland.
To be on your own for that amount of time and then learn how to be fully on your own.
Exactly.
So that helped to give you the confidence of traveling anywhere in the world and being on your own.
Yeah. I mean, the organization part and stuff, like you know, here in Aruba, I had my parents that would take me to the airport, pick me up. In the beginning, they were organizing accommodation and stuff. Then I moved to the Netherlands and all of a sudden you get to decide everything.
Yeah.
So I kind of planned my year that I would make sure to pass all of my tests so I didn't have to do any redos. So then I would have 2 weeks off and then I would always find the windiest spot in the world, book a ticket there. Rent a car, take myself and my gear to the airport, check it in, find a place to stay in those places.
So again, the sport was also part of the motivation to pass immediately.
To very
not have
much.
Any delays.
Yeah,
to not have any excuses not to be able to go and do your sport.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So we kind of touched on it earlier, but how would you say your Caribbean roots have influenced your athletic career?
I was thinking about that for a bit. I mean, I probably everyone would answer the same thing. I'm not sure, but I think just being from Aruba or being from the Caribbean is like a multicultural melting pot. You meet so many people from different backgrounds. We grow up speaking at least 3 languages. You learn another 2 at school. So I feel like you're kind of open to other cultures and other people.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of helped me while I was traveling, going to new places. Like I don't have a language barrier very often. Even if I don't speak something fluently, I can communicate, which I think for me is the most important in my travels, to be able to
communicate. Because you also speak Spanish?
Yeah, Spanish and French. Portuguese at some point.
Portuguese, damn. I mean, How many languages?
like 4 fluent, I would say, and then 2 more or 3 more that I can communicate at least.
Awesome.
So, yeah, for me, the language thing is a big thing, like, well, during travels. And I think coming from here, you're also kind of laid back. Yeah. I mean, everyone has their own personality and stuff. I'm definitely a bit more laid back and I'll see what happens. Like, I'm not super organized and, like, I don't need to control everything, I would say.
Yeah.
But still, coming from the Caribbean.
So maybe I wouldn't necessarily... even though we don't know each other that well, but yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say you're not organized, because based on everything you said so far, it seems like you're pretty organized, but it's more about being so strict on all the little details that you allow room to flow.
Almost the opposite, I would say. It's like, I think I'm so flexible that whatever happens, I'll just adapt to that kind of.
Okay.
So I very often leave. I think I plan what I need to plan, mm-hmm. that I know needs to be done. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of things that I know other people would be like, I need to know.
Such as?
I could fly to a place a day before and not have accommodation sorted, for example.
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Other people would be like, I need to know where to sleep, or I need to know that I can rent a car tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I've experienced so many things at some point that I feel like it kind of works out, you know? You know some people in some places, like I messaged the right people to know that things will be okay, kind of. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but...
I know exactly what you mean. Actually, a few weeks ago, I happened to have to go to Curaçao,
mm-hmm.
and I was so busy with work, everything before my flight, that I didn't have a moment to book the place to stay.
Yeah,
I needed a car. I didn't have a moment to look at the cars, etc. And then while I was on the plane, I just got the Wi-Fi and I started looking with the terrible internet in the sky. Yeah. I booked an accommodation. Then the guy messages me on booking.com because it was kind of like a guest house.
Yeah.
Then he asked me if I have a car. I said, no, I don't have a car yet. He's like, oh, you want any recommendations? Sure. He sends me two links. I add the guy on WhatsApp. Say, yeah. Hey, I need a car. He's like, okay, blah, blah, blah. I'll meet you at the airport. So booked everything on the flight over.
Exactly that. Yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like things just fall into place.
Yeah, so that's a bit of that mellowness and komt goed vibe, yeah, I think, of the Caribbean roots. Awesome. So now you already mentioned that your brother has played and still plays a significant role in sort of being that knowledgeable person in your life that you can turn to and ask for advice, or would give you advice, coaching, etc. So you could expand more on the role that your brother has played, but also others throughout your journey from a mentorship perspective. So who has been mentors in your life?
I think it was my family as a whole. We're a small family. So my dad, my mom, my brother and I,
mm-hmm.
and this whole windsurfing journey, we started it together. So the first World Cups kind of that we went there together. And I think firsthand, I learned from my parents what it takes to travel to these places. Like I said, like booking the tickets, getting accommodation, car. What I really liked from my parents also is that they wouldn't just leave us at the windsurfing spot. Mm-hmm. They would actually also take us around to visit the island, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You can get really caught up in the sport and staying on that beach.
Yeah.
And then you leave and you're like, what did I see of the place, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So what did I explore?
Yeah, I think my parents really instilled that in my brother and I. And then Quincy, he's a super skilled windsurfer. And there are things that you like, it, for example, if we're teaching, I will still say that Quincy is a better teacher than I am, you know? He's better at explaining certain techniques and... Mm. Keeping it simple, I would say. And that's, he does the same for me. There's just technique, my stance, or certain conditions, he sometimes points things out that maybe I didn't think about. And I feel like there's a good feedback between the two of us. And he's been to many places that I'm still competing at, you know, so he knows exactly where I'm at and what I need what I'm dealing with. Besides that, I started the tour so young. I was 13, 14 years old, but I think I was not inquisitive, but I was a very talkative kid, maybe, okay. Or I was not very shy, you know? So yeah. I would just walk up to the then 20 million times world champion and just ask them for tips, you know, or
how
they would do this and that. And I think maybe because I was a kid, they were like very friendly to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just this openness that we have from here already.
Yeah.
And again, I mentioned it before, but you see it also with the... I grew up kind of with the guys from Bonaire.
Mm-hmm.
When they reached like the top very quickly, and these were the guys that I was looking up to as well.
Oh yeah, because Bonaire is actually it's bigger on the windsurfing.
Right now there's way more windsurfers on that island. They really support the sport also.
Mm-hmm.
I was just there, and you get there, and there's like 100 people windsurfing, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also really alive among the locals. But they have three guys, Tonki, Tati, and Kiri. They're cousins, mm-hmm. brothers, and cousins. And they really brought freestyling to life. So when they started, this discipline was very new, and they were like at the forefront. So this is when I also started windsurfing, and I always looked up to them. So for me, it was also always very good to go there, learn from them. And then we also met on tour afterwards, which was nice to not feel alone, kind of, when you're traveling.
Yeah.
Because there's people that, like-minded people or people that understand where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of formed this like little pack when we were traveling. So that was always nice. So in the beginning, it was with my parents and my brother. Then my brother and I traveled. And then we would stick with kind of like the Caribbean crew.
Nice.
Yeah. And I mean, all the windsurfers are a certain type of people. They're all pretty laid back, and they have they're pretty easygoing. But then there's still groups, and I feel like with the Caribbean ones, we were the most like-minded kind of.
Yeah.
So
at 33 now, where till when do you think you'll be continuing traveling the world, competing on this level?
Yeah, I thought about that a lot. If you would have asked me like 8 years ago, I think it's been about 10 years that I've been saying like, yeah, I'll stop next year. And then every year I keep going. And now I kind of changed it. Since 2 years or since 3 years, I'm saying like, yeah, let's just see where it goes, you know? Yeah. I think the mindset is changing a little bit in sports.
Mm-hmm.
That
I mean, LeBron is my age.
Still going.
I'm 40.
Yeah.
And he's still going, man.
And why not, you know? There was this saying of you need to stop at your peak.
Mm.
Or once you're 31, 32, you're old. And I think from what I'm seeing and what I'm experiencing myself, I think the most important in sports is like the longevity.
Yeah.
If you can stretch your career, why not?
Why not?
You know, if you can physically handle it, then just go for it. And I feel really fit. I feel good. I still love it a lot. And maybe even more than I did before. I appreciate everything so much more.
Now to think of it, because I'm not a super big sports guy, but I do watch like quite a few documentaries and sort of analyze the human, the psychology behind some of the greatest athletes. Would you say that the athletes at least of our sort of millennial generation-ish, that they've been way more health conscious and way more body conscious and continuing to keep themselves in the best state to be able to achieve more longevity versus let's say 2-3 decades ago?
I think so. I think there's so much more information out there now, like on diet, on stretching, mobility, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think even LeBron James, he spends so much money on just maintaining his body. Like,
yeah, they say it's like $1 million plus per year.
Yeah, going to the physio, chiropractor, just keeping your body in shape instead of tearing it down. Because all of these sports are high impact sports, so it really, your body really deteriorates, you know, so you have to take care of it. And I think nowadays we just know so much more, and we know how to take care of ourselves better, I think. So, yeah.
So that's probably also a big part of why that needle is shifting more towards being able to compete longer and have more longevity.
Yeah, and you see it. Like, you even in tennis, I think it's such a physically difficult, hard sport. Like, at least like Rafael Nadal and Djokovic, they're like 36, 37, and... Or Rafael retired, but Djokovic is like still at the top, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he's quite a bit older than the rest. So if you can stretch it, why not?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything bad about fading out, maybe.
Because
as I said, people said you should stop at your peak. But if you're at your peak, then I feel like you have so much more to give, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And also for the generation after, I think these people want to compete against you, you know?
True.
And if it can keep you on your toes to compete with younger people, then why not? I think I have this like worry of falling into an abyss of nothingness if I'm not competing anymore, because I'm such a competitive person and it really drives me.
And it's been such a huge part of your entire life so far.
Yeah. So what am I going to be competitive at afterwards if I don't windsurf? Like,
there can be the second act.
Yeah.
But you're not thinking about that as yet.
Yeah. At some point. But I feel like I can give it another 3 or 4 years or something.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. I've been lucky enough to not have any injuries or any setbacks. So, yeah.
Awesome.
And yeah.
So that was looking into the crystal ball of the future. Mm. Let's rewind the clock a little bit and go back to 18-year-old Sarikita.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was sitting right next to you,
mm-hmm.
what life advice would you give her? With all that you know now today?
Yeah, I would maybe tell her to trust herself a little bit more, like her own judgment, and not maybe feeling like other people's opinions matter more. Just to tell her that her own opinions also matter a lot. And maybe to take up a lot more space, I would say.
A lot more space.
Yeah, okay. just to be yourself and not make yourself any smaller, I would say.
Nice.
I think so.
So could you expand a little bit on what that period was like for you then in that context?
I mean, I think I've always had a... I don't feel like it was a... When I was 18, yeah, everything was new and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, I am or have been like a bit naive person. So I would... I don't know because of what. I think that's just how I was. So yeah, I feel like I didn't really feel like my opinions mattered so much, you know. I was around older people a lot of the time, so I felt like maybe whatever they said was more important and stuff. But over the years, I've learned that actually the way I'm thinking matches that person, or it's also correct what I'm thinking, and the age doesn't really matter that much, I think.
Yeah.
So to not be intimidated by other people their age and seemingly being more knowledgeable than you are. I think there's experiences that you've had and you can draw on.
100%.
I think so.
And the vast amount of experience that you would accumulate over traveling the whole world. Because I always say travel is some of the best education there is.
Yeah, I think
so. There's no education like travel education.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Learning and understanding different cultures. And it takes away a lot of the ignorances that people might also go through life with not understanding other cultures.
I agree. I think the best experiences I've had were going to places that, like for example, Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in Holland doesn't necessarily is in the best light.
Yeah.
Travel there with my mom, and it's to this day, it's one of my favorite places to travel to.
Oh, wow.
When I go. The food is amazing. The people are super friendly. The country is beautiful. So that was insane. Traveling to Korea, for example, didn't know anything about the culture at all, you know? And then you see they live completely different than we do, but that also works.
So expand on that. What is completely different than we do?
Just like the food that they eat, the way that they address people, for example. In Korea and Japan, for example, is very different. But I think in Asia, like, people are more respectful. They're maybe not so straightforward. Like in Japan, you ask them something and they say no, they say no like this. Like they don't know how to say no, for example. So it's a bit confusing. And it just teaches you to, just put yourself in other people's shoes and how they go through life and what type of culture they have, I would say. So, yeah. Something, Asia was like a culture shock, kind of.
So if we touch on a bit more of those places that you've been, so the example of Turkey was quite interesting. Korea, is there any other place that stands out that like taught you some big life lessons?
Cape Town, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think is beautiful, but there's like a really big contrast between rich and poor.
Mm.
And then me as a windsurfer, I don't really meet that poor side so much, actually, because you do end up in the more welfare.
Affluent neighborhoods.
But you still meet it more than, for example, where I'm from here in Aruba, or if I'm in the Netherlands, like everyone is pretty okay off.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, like that really opens up your eyes to how people go through life sometimes, you know? So mm-hmm. I think Cape Town has had an influence for sure. Where? I've been to, yeah, Thailand, Myanmar, Korea, like, is so different, everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so now if we circle back here to Aruba,
mm-hmm.
where passion and purpose started to meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
You have the university where you teach kids.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you had that?
The Winthrop University started in 2021, so about 4 years now.
Okay.
Still trying to expand it, but for now it's like a fun hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us more about it.
I started it with Uda Johanna. She's from Norway, and we also compete together. And I think it was in COVID times. So we actually do live, like, camps on site. So we meet the people in different locations and we coach them. But then at some point, you couldn't really travel anymore. And we were just trying to find a way to keep in touch with people. So we started this online Winthrop University so we could do online coaching.
Online coaching of windsurfing.
Of windsurfing, okay. Yeah. So it would
Please, how does that work?
It's more theoretical, I would say.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of videos, for example, or that person shares their videos. And for us, it's quite easy to point out certain techniques or mistakes or what they're doing wrong or right.
Yeah.
And that usually is very helpful for people. Because in sports, it's not only about practicing the sport, but you actually need to think about it as well. Mm. So that session is a theory session so that you can really think about the movements that you're doing, and then you take that to the water. Because that's how I train also. Like, I film myself and then I rewatch it and I see where I can improve.
Mm.
And it gives you a different awareness. Cause
So in the university, you guys do a mixture of a theory and practical.
Yeah, so it started out as an online coaching program, but then we also, now we can travel again, so we just do coaching in different locations in the world, and we call it Winthrop University.
But you still do like the online part of...
Yeah, yeah, people still sign up for that.
And then when you go to location, then they would show up at the locations, and then they get the practical side of things.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We have, it's like a four-day coaching program. And
okay,
then
nice.
We go on the water with them, we film them, theory on the beach.
So Uda is her name?
Yeah.
So she also lives in Norway?
Yeah, yeah, she's okay. From Norway. But we're traveling all year long, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So then, I also live in Holland or Aruba, but I'm never there, so. Yeah.
Yeah, you're a hard lady to pin down.
Yeah. Gotta keep moving.
Gotta keep moving. Awesome. Yeah, so is there any other thoughts, words, things that you want to let the people know?
I mean, I think the main thing that I would say very often, like, I think what people see very often, in my case maybe, is kind of like the successes, and that's what we also see of other people that are successful, and you don't really mm-hmm. necessarily see the behind the scenes. To just keep in mind that nothing is very straightforward. Like, if anyone achieves that kind of success, or any success, it's blood, sweat, and tears, I guess, that they put into that. And to remind yourself also that if you're maybe on the way to something and you have some setback, you're gonna have a lot more of those, you know. Mm. So you just gotta pick yourself up and then keep making the next steps. I think there's no way to achieve kind of greatness or be successful without failing first.
Yeah.
So and that's just part of the process, I think. And it would be boring if we could just manage everything like this, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah. I think to enjoy the process and yeah, it's an experience. Like on your way to wherever you're going, you'll get sidetracked, or not sidetracked, but it's like different things you're gonna experience that you didn't anticipate or yeah. Wouldn't expect, and I think it's all part of it. So,
and I think coming back to what you mentioned earlier about just really enjoying the journey,
yeah.
And that in recent years you've been way more enjoying the journey than maybe in the earlier years. Yeah, I mean, you were enjoying it, but the focus was more on winning than on enjoying the process, right?
Yeah, I was very young when I started, and I was very lucky that my parents could actually take me to these places. And yeah. I'm super grateful for the experience, and they were very important to me. But not that I would take it for granted, but I just wouldn't think about it. And now if I look back, I'm like, whoa, I did all of those things when I was 14, 15, 16, 20, 22, 23.
Yeah.
Even now, if I think that I went to Australia when I was 23 and driving 8 hours from one spot to the next.
Wow.
Like, how? So I'm learning more about my parents' stresses and stuff. But yeah, like now, because I've had so many years, I don't know, I just appreciate it more. And it's not just the competitions and the being on the water. It's also kind of the family and friends that I have now on tour and what every country has to offer, you know. So I like to go sightseeing and learning more about the places. And
yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's what you got to do when you're there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Miss, can I call you Miss?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Thank you very, very much for taking the time out to be on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And we definitely gonna continue to watch a journey from afar and cheer you on and continue to create and do and achieve epic shh.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Hey, thank you so much.
And with that, guys, we'll see you in the next one. So please like, comment, and subscribe. And if there were any questions that I missed or any thoughts that you had about the episode, please let us know down below. And we highly appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you. Bless.